Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Products from Vietnam have become more popular in the United States than ever before. U.S. imports from the Southeast Asian nation increased 36% last year to $67 billion, the U.S. Census Bureau reported. This represents the highest increase in a single year since 2003. Vietnam is a major supplier of electronic products, furniture, clothing, footwear, and fish to the United States. It also is a major exporter of coffee, rice, and other foods. Michael Ryan is the Director of Economics at IHS Market Economics, an investment research service. He told VOA the latest increase shows Vietnam is making a massive reorientation in trade toward the U.S. market. The United States has become far and away the most important driver of Vietnam's export engine, accounting for 2/3 of Vietnam's total export growth in 2019, Ryan said. Many businesses have been moving to Vietnam to reduce their dependence on China, where it has become more costly or harder to do business for several reasons. These include the trade war between the U.S. and China, higher operating costs, and the spread of the new coronavirus. After U.S. officials asked Vietnam to buy more American goods, the country announced in March it would buy $3 billion worth of farm goods. That promise came after Vietnam said it would buy American-made airplanes. Less than a year ago, U.S. President Donald Trump threatened Vietnam with tariffs. He accused Vietnam of abusing the trading system, but did not say how. Trump said he wants to increase U.S. exports to Vietnam to help make up for the much larger levels of imported goods. Instead, the difference between what the U.S. imports from Vietnam compared to the U.S. exports has increased every year from 2008 to 2019, the Census Bureau found. While economists say a trade balance is not the only way to measure trade success, Vietnam is exporting more because of the U.S. trade war with China. Jing Wu is an assistant professor of business at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. He told VOA that the trade war did not get companies to move to the United States. Instead, it caused many to move to other nations like Vietnam, he said. Wu and others at the university's business school studied the relationship between trade uncertainty and the movement of companies. Their research supported the idea that many companies seek out new markets during a trade war. As examples, they named major companies including Apple, Chevron, and Victoria's Secret owner L Brands, which all have moved more business to Vietnam. Their study was carried out before the arrival of COVID-19, the coronavirus first reported in China that has since spread around the world. The virus has greatly damaged supply chains and economic activity around the world. But some businesses say they expect to be active in Vietnam after the crisis and continue to invest there. For example, the U.S. ASEAN Business Council recently acted on plans to send business representatives to Vietnam. I'm Brian Lin.
Andrea Chabant Sanchez is a 29-year-old publicist who lives in Madrid. He usually travels to Paris once a month to see his girlfriend, Emma Besançon. In January, he planned all his trips through July. Now those trips are canceled. Travel restrictions have stopped him and many other people around the world from visiting their loved ones. I honestly don't know when I'm going to see the person I love again, said Sanchez. He and Besançon, who is 24, have not been together since before Spain declared a state of emergency on March 14th. I always had a date, one for this month, next month, said Sanchez. Lola Gomez is a 22-year-old acting student from Malaga, Spain. She also feels the pain of separation. It's only been 11 days, but it feels like I haven't seen her in a month, she said of her girlfriend, Sara Lozano, also 22. Lozano left Madrid to join her family in Pamplona the day before the quarantine was ordered. Neither knows when they will next meet. We've been separated before, but this isn't like Christmas or summertime, when it's long, but you're doing a million other things, said Gomez. This quarantine means a lot of time alone, thinking. Asking yourself questions. A lot of time shut in, too. You miss your partner so much more, she said. Etienne Berge is a 26-year-old humanitarian policy advisor working in Myanmar. He will not see his girlfriend, Amber Medlin, next month. On March 16th, Myanmar ordered quarantine for anyone arriving from countries where COVID-19 is spreading. So, Medland, a 29-year-old writer based in London, canceled her plans to travel. Still, the couple is finding ways to be together from thousands of miles apart. They visit on video calls while watching the same television show or having a drink. Gomez and Lozano share mealtimes over video calls, and they always video call one another just before they go to sleep. That way, you give and get tenderness before sleeping, Gomez said. It is not quite the same as the real thing, however. The person you love should be the one person you can break confinement with completely, because you lay beside them at night, and I can't, said Sanchez. He stayed alone in Madrid while Besançon went to be with her family in Normandy, France. As the coronavirus spreads, separated couples are facing the fact that days apart turn into weeks and now possibly months. I'm John Russell.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says school closings have affected the education of more than 80% of students worldwide. Robert Jenkins is the organization's global chief of education. He said, "Based on lessons learned with the school closures in response to Ebola, the longer children stay away from school, the less likely they are to ever return." Ebola is a highly infectious virus that has affected areas in Africa periodically over more than 40 years. The coronavirus crisis has spread to at least 175 countries, affecting children around the world. UNICEF says it is aiding 145 low- and middle-income countries with tools and money to help children continue their learning. In the United States, most of the schools that closed their doors because of the COVID-19 outbreak said the closings would be temporary. But health officials warned that Americans may need to keep schools closed for many months. John Peterson is dean of the University of South Carolina College of Education. He answered some questions about how this might affect the education of millions of children on the website The Conversation. Educators will have to find ways to help students want to learn. If a lesson plan does not excite students at school, then the lesson plan really will not work at home. Teachers will have to be more creative and resourceful while classes are suspended. For example, in the U.S., they can take students on virtual classroom field trips to places like the National Aquarium in Baltimore. They can see everything from wild bears in Alaska to classical music concerts through the Virtual School Activities website. Students can learn how to carry out science experiments at Fun Learning for Kids. In addition, the New York Public Library has more than 300,000 books that students can download for free. Students with special needs can use educational technology and mobile learning. We do not know how long this crisis will last. The federal government has permitted states to cancel required standardized tests for the school year. States and schools will have to decide if students should move on to the next grade or graduate. Not sending students to the next grade or not graduating seniors would affect all public schools, colleges, and universities. It would also affect families and the workforce. There are measures that states and schools could take. For example, some schools could move to year-round schooling, extend their current or upcoming academic year, or lengthen school days and cancel some holidays. In places like El Paso, Texas, Romeoville, Illinois, and Bardstown, Kentucky, some schools already operate all year or had longer school years after hurricanes, floods, or other disasters. Whatever school leaders decide to do, it is going to cost more money. And it is not clear how officials will be able to pay for the new measures. Peterson believes that states, schools, and teachers have to deal with problems quickly. Their action has reduced the possibility that extreme measures will be needed and that the education system will not fall behind. He noted the example of one of the teachers he works with. He said Professor Gloria Boutte always starts meetings with a traditional Maasai greeting. How are the children?
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the period known as the Cold War. The Cold War began after World War II. The main enemies were the United States and the Soviet Union. The Cold War got its name because both sides were afraid of fighting each other directly. In a hot war, nuclear weapons might destroy everything. So instead, both sides fought each other indirectly. They supported opposing sides in conflicts in different parts of the world. They also used words as weapons. They threatened and denounced each other, or they tried to make each other look foolish. Over the years, leaders on both sides changed, yet the Cold War continued. It was the major force in world politics for most of the second half of the 20th century. The Cold War world was separated into three groups. The United States led the West. This group included countries with democratic political systems. The Soviet Union led the East. This group included countries with communist political systems. The non-aligned group included countries that did not want to be tied to either the West or the East. Harry Truman was the first American president to fight the Cold War. He used several policies. One was the Truman Doctrine. This was a plan to give money and military aid to countries threatened by communism. The Truman Doctrine effectively stopped communists from taking control of Greece and Turkey. Another policy was the Marshall Plan. This strengthened the economies and governments of countries in Western Europe. A major event in the Cold War was the Berlin Airlift. After World War II, the United States and its allies divided Germany. Berlin was a part of communist East Germany. The city was divided into East and West. In June 1948, Soviet-led forces blocked all roads and railways leading to the western part of Berlin. President Truman quickly ordered military airplanes to fly coal, food, and medicine to the city. The planes kept coming, sometimes landing every few minutes for more than a year. The United States received help from Britain and France. Together, they provided almost 2.5 million tons of supplies on about 280,000 flights. The United States also led the formation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in 1949. NATO was a joint military group. Its purpose was to defend against Soviet forces in Europe. The Soviet Union and its East European allies formed their own joint military group, the Warsaw Pact, 6 years later. In 1953, Soviet leader Joseph Stalin died. His death gave the new American president, Dwight Eisenhower, a chance to deal with new Soviet leaders. In July 1955, Eisenhower and Nikolai Bulganin met in Geneva, Switzerland. the leaders of Britain and France also attended. Eisenhower proposed that the Americans and Soviets agree to let their military bases be inspected by air by the other side. The Soviets later rejected the proposal. Yet, the meeting in Geneva was not considered a failure. After all, the leaders of the world's most powerful nations had shaken hands. Cold War tensions increased, then eased, then increased again over the years. The changes came as both sides attempted to influence political and economic developments around the world. For example, the Soviet Union provided military, economic, and technical aid to communist governments in Asia. The United States then helped 8 Asian nations fight communism by establishing the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, known as CETO. In the 1950s, the United States began sending military advisors to help South Vietnam defend itself against communist North Vietnam. That aid would later expand into a long and bloody period of American involvement in Vietnam. The Cold War also affected the Middle East. In the 1950s, both East and West offered aid to Egypt to build the Aswan High Dam on the Nile River. The West canceled its offer, however, after Egypt bought weapons from the communist government in Czechoslovakia. Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser then seized control of the company that operated the Suez Canal. A few months later, Israel invaded Egypt. France and Britain joined the invasion. For once, the United States and the Soviet Union agreed on a major issue. Both supported a United Nations resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. The Suez Crisis was a political victory for the Soviets. When the Soviet Union supported Egypt, it gained new friends in the Arab world. In 1959, Cold War tensions eased a little. The new Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev, visited Dwight Eisenhower in the United States. The meeting was very friendly. But the next year, relations got worse again. An American U-2 reconnaissance airplane was shot down over the Soviet Union. The plane and its pilot, Francis Gary Powers, were captured. Eisenhower admitted that such planes had been spying on the Soviets for years. In a speech at the United Nations, Khrushchev got so angry that he took off his shoe and beat it on a table. John F. Kennedy followed Eisenhower as president in 1961. During his early days in office, Cuban exiles invaded Cuba. It came to be known as the Bay of Pigs invasion. The forces wanted to oust the communist government of Fidel Castro. America's Central Intelligence Agency had provided training for the exiles. But the United States failed to send military planes to protect them during the invasion. As a result, almost all were killed or taken prisoner by Cuban forces trained and supported by the Soviet Union and Soviet allied nations. At the same time in Europe, tens of thousands of East Germans had been fleeing to the West. East Germany's government decided to stop them. It built a wall separating the eastern and western parts of the city of Berlin. Guards shot at anyone who tried to flee by climbing over. During Kennedy's second year in office, American intelligence reports discovered Soviet missiles in Cuba.
This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.
The Soviet Union denied the missiles were there. Yet American photographs taken from high in the air proved they were. America's ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson.
Let me ask you one simple question. Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation, yes or no?
Mr. Stevenson, would you continue your statement, please? You will receive the answer in the due course. Do not worry.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision. And I'm also prepared to present the evidence in this room.
The Cuban Missile Crisis easily could have resulted in a nuclear war. Americans felt especially threatened with those missiles just 150 kilometers from the Florida coast. But the crisis ended after a week. Khrushchev agreed to remove the missiles if the United States agreed not to interfere in Cuba. Some progress was made in easing Cold War tensions when Kennedy was president. In 1963, the two sides reached a major arms control agreement. They agreed to ban tests of nuclear weapons above ground, underwater, and in space. They also established a direct telephone link between the White House and the Kremlin. Relations between East and West also improved when Richard Nixon was president. He and Leonid Brezhnev met several times. They reached several arms control agreements. One reduced the number of missiles used to shoot down enemy nuclear weapons. It also banned the testing and deployment of long-distance missiles for 5 years. A major change in the Cold War would take place in 1985 when Mikhail Gorbachev became leader of the Soviet Union. He met 4 times with President Ronald Reagan. Gorbachev withdrew Soviet forces from Afghanistan, and he signed an agreement with the United States to destroy all middle-distance and short-distance nuclear missiles. By 1989, there was widespread unrest in Eastern Europe. Gorbachev did not intervene as one Eastern European country after another cut its ties with the Soviet Union. The Berlin Wall, the major symbol of communist oppression, was torn down in November of that year. In less than a year, East and West Germany became one nation again. A few months after that, Warsaw Pact countries officially ended the alliance. The Cold War was over.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is VOA News.